On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we scream and yell and rant about the travesty, the Shonda, the sham that is Jacob Mezerowski making the All-Star game. I'm mostly kidding. We're okay with it. We also review day one of the MLB draft. We were in attendance and we talk about why there weren't any players there, tell you which drafts we liked. We didn't really talk about what drafts we didn't like, so you can just kind of read between those lines. Chat a little bit about the Red Sox winning 10 in a row heading into the break. And then we'll, you know, talk about the Pope because that's what we do on this podcast. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks Jacob Mezerowski should have been at the NBA All-Star Game as well. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And with that frame, I mean, the Miz could slam down.
Yeah, why not? Send him to the Pro Bowl, whatever the heck that consists of at this point. Probably a worse fit for the Miz. So we are going to talk about that. It is Monday morning here in Atlanta. We are so excited for the Home Run Derby tonight. A few updates on that. We will recap the first day of the draft. Ooh, that was an interesting evening at the Coca-Cola Roxy. That was a good time.
No free ads.
And then it is Monday. There was baseball played this weekend. This weekend is the least baseball we watch of any weekend in the regular season, barring, you know, vacations and whatnot. But there was some interesting stuff that happened. So don't worry, Red Sox fans. We are going to talk about that fat W10, that mop of the Rays. But Jake, let us begin with our opener.
The news came trickling out on Friday evening. Jacob Mezerowski, All-Star. And the reaction to this news was super level-headed, normal, considered.
Which means I don't think we have much to talk about.
Let's move on.
I saw, when I logged in, I saw a lot of people being like,
congrats.
A lot of people just said, okay. A lot of just like, got it. Sounds good. I'm going to move on with my day. That's how people react often online.
What's funny about it is that no one reacted to any of the other replacements, like, at all. Like,
we're
Carlos
zooming.
Estevez.
We're zooming way past Morahone and all these other guys. We'll get to some of these other replacements, but this was an interesting decision. Let's get into it.
Jacob Mezerowski has made 5 starts in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. They have been generally very good.
4 of them have been spectacular.
The Mets.
What? Mets
gave him a swirly.
Mets got to be feeling. They're like, man. Now that's a feather in their cap. They didn't even know that they were, you know, dominating an all-star, but they were.
He's an all-star type guy. Yeah. 4-1. That's all you need to know. Pitcher wins. 4-1 with a 2.81 ERA, but most notably 33 strikeouts across those 5 starts. He has been electrifying in his most recent outing against the Dodgers. The Miz struck out 12 dudes across 6 innings. His only blemish, a leadoff home run to Shohei Ohtani, also an all-star. And that earned him, in quotes, a selection to the MLB All-Star team after just 5 major league starts. Now, a little context. Last year, something similar happened with Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens debuts in, I believe, early May. Mm-hmm. Makes, I think it was 11 starts.
Mm-hmm. I'm about to read you his numbers, but go ahead.
I think when Paul Skeens was put on the All-Star roster, no one really batted an eye at it.
There was a little bit, there was a tinge of the discourse, but it really ramped up when he was named the starter.
Yes. And now we have something a little bit similar with Mezerowski making the All-Star team after just 5 starts.
Yeah. So Skeens, I want to move Skeens to the side here because 11 starts is not a lot of starts. But at that point, now this last start of the first half last year, I can't remember, was before or after he was named, but he 66 innings, 89 strikeouts, 1.90 ERA. He was 6-0. At that point, while it was still 11 starts, there was not really anybody disputing that, like, yeah, he's one of the best pitchers already.
Correct.
What Jacob Mizrowski has done in five starts is become one of the pitchers that you want to tune in and watch. But nobody can prove anything, really, in five starts unless they were five perfect games in a row. And so that, combined with a number of other pitchers, let's get into the logistics of this. Like, how does this happen?
Right.
Why does this? We can get, I guess, how and why are both connected but slightly different conversations. So let's do how first.
Sure. So the original list of pitchers, they are elected. They are chosen by both the league and the player ballots. Then, pitchers who are throwing on Sunday and Saturday, 99% of the time, do not pitch. The league needs people to pitch. They have innings to cover. They need outs, right? They're like the Dodgers in the NLCS.
They're like, how are we piecing this All-Star game together?
And Brent Honeywell is not available.
Get Morihone on the line.
Throw 50 pitches. So they call, they have a like a list of dudes, right?
Right.
Who's next on the list. And they call them and they say, hey, will you, we'd love to have you. Will you pitch? And if the guy says yes, they're an All-Star. Awesome. If they say no, which is what happened with Ranger Suarez, we'll get to that in a second, then the guy's not an All-Star. Mm-hmm. Because MLB, as the replacements, you got to play. No one's like, hey, I'm looking for a ringer for my softball game on Tuesday.
If you could just come and cheer us on, that'd be awesome.
If you could just come and kick it.
Yeah. So this is now, I don't think we've ever really thought too hard about this part of the process.
Yeah.
But as we bring the Phillies into this conversation, you mentioned Ranger Suarez.
Yeah.
The other main character here is Christopher Sanchez, who did start on Sunday. And so because he was not going to be a candidate to pitch on Tuesday, assuming he was going to pitch on Sunday for the Phillies in, you know, a game that's important because it's the Phillies and, you know, they're fighting for the top of the NL East. That's just circumstance, right? Like, but as we get to what the Phillies said about this in reaction to Mizrowski, and I think you can understand the argument, which is that, no, he should still be able to be named an All-Star, even if he's not going to pitch. Now, that goes back to the original sin of him just not being on the team to begin with, which is totally reasonable. You could even say that by the time we are getting closer and closer to the All-Star team, maybe it's, oh, if it was this happened on Friday or Thursday, they could have replaced him earlier. Yeah. But it isn't, I will say that it is an interesting point that, like, they, you can't be named as a replacement if you aren't going to pitch because you happen to be pitching on Sunday.
Like you didn't get elected.
Yeah.
You didn't make it.
Yeah. Which is already, again, I think, as in the case of Sanchez, a mistake, a failing of the players. Do not recognize that he was a snub last year and he was added as a replacement last year.
Just quickly, the numbers here. 115 innings pitched, 2.50 ERA, 9.55 K per nine. He is, if you'd like pitcher war, sixth in the big leagues in pitcher war. Ahead of Bubich, ahead of, you know, Hunter Brown, ahead of Framber, ahead of Max Fried, whatever, right? He is one of the best pitchers in baseball this season.
Fourth in the NL in pitcher F4. So, yeah, I mean, he is the obvious one, but because he was pitching on Sunday, not eligible. But let's get past that part of it, the logistics of whether you should name a replacement or not.
What happens? Yeah. So after Mizrowski is added on Friday night, the Phillies get into the clubhouse after, I believe, a tough loss to the San Diego Padres out west. Mm-hmm. And they, as the kids say, they spit their truth, right? They get their feelings off their chest.
Hey, Matt Gelb, come over here. I have thoughts.
Matt Gelb of The Athletic, friend of the program. Come here.
I'm sure Matt Gelb did not need any prying to go ask him about this.
Trey Turner, quote, what a joke. That's effing terrible. I mean, that's terrible, dude. Nick Castellanos, it's turning into the Savannah Bananas. Incredible quote. Castellanos again. Major League Baseball is really just focusing on the most marketable players. So the fact that they can have someone in the game that is going to basically blow out one inning, throw 103, 104. I mean, that'd be sick, Nick, but it's funny. They're going to get more eyeballs in baseball. They think that it's going to be more popular.
Uh-oh.
Hey,
Nick's getting a little closer.
Nick, I got news for you, my dude.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That is true. I'm going to read this quote back because this is the reason that Mizrowski's going. Major League Baseball is focusing on the most marketable players. Good.
And
great.
Yeah.
Time out. People who are like, MLB, not growing the game. MLB is just focusing on the most marketable players. 10 points to Gryffindor. Next thing, The fact that they think that someone who's throwing 103, 104 is going to get more eyeballs in baseball.
Also true.
Also true. They think it's going to get more popular. Yes.
Also, again, we've generally avoided bananas discourse. Is there someone throwing 102 on the bananas? I was like, because they probably shouldn't be on the bananas anymore.
If anybody on the bananas is throwing 102,
they are
call your agent.
They're doing it. I know it seems like they're making good money over there, but anyway. But yes, Castellanos.
Correct.
He nailed it. He's not happy about it, but he's kind of onto something. Now, again, the league did ask multiple other pitchers, it seems like, before they ended up with Mizorowski. Now, you could still say that Mizorowski shouldn't have even been within the first 20 candidates because he's made 5 starts. That's all fine.
Sure.
But as you open this up, this is an interesting moment in how we consider what the All-Star game is, what it's supposed to be. And I think if you're the league, it is a situation where it's like, wow, this skinny kid from Missouri throwing 102 and striking out 12 Dodgers, like, kind of appeared at it, just fell in our laps, and everyone is freaking out about him. Why wouldn't we want to keep putting him up there? Now, the reason is because you are going to be alienating your players. You are kind of telling other fan bases that we aren't really concerned about rewarding, because players, I mean, and fans clearly also, like, the All-Star game is important. The Sure. game itself isn't important, but it is a very real honor. And this is the other point made by some of the other Phillies and other people talking about it, which is that, yeah, you say, so when you're announced, it's X time All-Star, it's so-and-so. And this is, again, we're not mad at Mizorowski, and we can get to his perspective here in a second, but I do think that indisputably it does cheapen it. Does that mean I disagree with the decision in the context of what we just talked about, which is that, like, Mizorowski is one of the biggest stories of the last month, and you can carry that momentum into an exhibition game? I get it. I don't blame players for being mad, and I don't really blame fans of other teams who feel like they're deserving pitchers who've thrown 100 innings deserve it more. I get that, too.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm less... I think it does cheapen it, and I also am not as bothered by it as maybe I thought when we first got this news on Friday.
I like it. I like that he's there. I totally understand why players are mad. The fundamental dynamic here is that the players in the league view the All-Star game as two entirely different things. Players view it as an honor, an accomplishment, an achievement to be here. And the league, understandably, is viewing it as a showcase, an exhibition, an opportunity to market the sport to people who aren't usually going to watch baseball. And so if you're making a decision, do I want to have Jacob Mizorowski throw 101, or do I want to put Rockies reliever Jake Bird or Reds reliever Emilio Pagan
right
on the All-Star team? Like, this is the superior decision. And guess what, friends? The fact, and we're falling for this, the fact that we are talking about it on this podcast, that this made news at all, that the mm-hmm. Phillies got mad, it is all interesting. It yep. is good friction. It is fascinating discourse for a league whose All-Star game is no longer what it once was. The little bit of context here, maybe that I'm getting too deep into the weeds. Before everyone had a television in their hand all the time, you did not get to see the baseball players in the other league, right? If I lived in an AL city in 1963 and I wanted to watch Willie Mays, All-Star game, that's when I got to see him. And so people tuned in for that opportunity. Now you can watch, you know,
there's interleague every day.
You can watch Paul
Skeens. You can watch it on your phone.
Drink his coffee yeah. right in the morning. Like yeah. it's a whole new world. And so the league needs to find a way to make the All-Star game a more riveting experience. And guess what? You, Jordan, you, the listener, the people you know who barely watch baseball, you're more likely to tune in for the Jacob Mizorowski inning now than you would have if this had been any other pitcher in the league. Yeah. And that is exactly the point.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, like, I'm totally sympathetic to the perspective for the players. And it is, but also, by the way, because of all the replacements, we already are at the level of, like, there's a big difference between Adrian Morihone All-Star. Again, awesome season. Respect.
Great season.
And Shohei Ohtani All-Star. Like, those look the same on their baseball reference pages. We know that those are very different situations. Sure. And because every year we add more and more and more replacements, the value of the team is already less than I think most people maybe realize.
And I think another reason that people get mad about all-star snubs is the money, which is totally understandable.
Yep.
I think it depends on the player and what they have in their contract. There are certain bonuses. But in the case of Christopher Sanchez, $50K bonus for making the all-star team. Now, I know this is a guy making millions of dollars, but like $50K is...
And the Phillies gave it to him.
But I think that's why you get so much frustration for players. They're like, my guy deserves the honor, and my guy deserves the cabbage.
Yeah, he earned it. Right. And that's the thing, right? He earned it. Now, all that said, it's not Jacob Mizrowski's fault. Like,
he cried.
Cool. Again, this has been seemingly a pretty overwhelming emotional experience for him with his first month in the big leagues, but he's handling it pretty well, and it's a hell of a story. And I know that he obviously is just going to want to do the Brewers proud and prove the people wrong that, like, because the best thing that Jacob Mizrowski could do from here is not just about what he does on Tuesday. It's become one of the best pitchers of baseball, which he clearly has the talent to be. So let's see it. I mean, why not? No one's doubted that he has amazing stuff. So we will see where this goes. It is an interesting chapter in his story now, for sure. But again, it's not his fault. And I will say it is still, right, we're going to have media day today. There will be, not just him, but all the other all-stars are going to go, oh, what do you think? This kid, how he didn't earn it. And so we'll have another round of this discourse. But like you said, I'm looking forward to watching him on Tuesday, and it's certainly not his fault. So I do think we come down in the general stance of, like, I completely understand where the Phillies are coming from. I think that you could say that the process of adding these all-stars is flawed. When you are down to however many replacements that you ask, and you have all these pitchers pitching on Saturday and Sunday, I'm not surprised they ended up here. And it is an interesting decision, and I think it'll be fun. And yeah, it's keeping. Listen, baseball has this part of the calendar, and so making the most of this amount of attention when you can is not a bad thing, and totally understandable.
Mizrowski is going to get booed so hard when he pitches in Philly.
Oh, in Philly, yeah. I was like, I don't know. I don't think they're going to boom here. Yeah. Yeah. Probably true.
But
we'll see how he responds.
Like, when pitchers are pulling out and players are pulling out, that already cheapens the experience.
No, I know. That's what I was saying before. Like, we're already, which again is sometimes you can roll your eyes at when players back out and why they do and why they don't. There's all kinds of range of reasons why guys do that. But anyway. But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious, you know, how people feel about this. So, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We are
one more thing about the players being mad.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The players' perspective always matters because they are the people playing the game, right? However, it is not everything all the time, right?
Yes.
There are other actors in this world of baseball. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to remember that just because Mizrowski being here pisses off the players does not automatically mean that it is a bad thing.
Yeah, well, and again, too, it is, listen, we know that there are also fans of other teams that are, it's not just about the players, but we do try and weigh those perspectives as much as we can. All right, a couple other bits of All-Star related news before we take a break. I mean, we have all kinds of other replacements. I keep mentioning Morahone, but I mean, he's having a hell of a season. Randy does replace Julio, which is appropriate and well-deserved. We got Drew Rasmussen in Carlos Rodon, who was on my all-snub team. He replaces Max Fried, which is very cool. We got Michael Garcia. Now, that is a very fun one. For those of you who don't know, he is Ronald Acuna Jr.'s cousin. So while Acuna will not be in the Derby anymore, and we're going to talk about that in a second, Michael and Ronald is an awesome combo that we will see together at All-Star this week. Casey Mize, another Tiger added, which is cool. I know Zach McKinstry got added. Carlos Estevez, another Royal. And yeah, there may be Rodon. I mentioned him. Yeah, on the snub team. So shout out to Carlos. Good for him, man. All-Star Yankee. That's cool.
All of your All-Star snub frustration, George Springer.
Oh, there's still so many. Right. Suzuki didn't end up getting added. Juan Soto's going to be on his couch or on a beach somewhere. And that's just the nature of... That's the other thing, is we're adding more pitchers than hitters because that's how this, just the nature of the beast.
And it just, the randomness of it, a bunch of AL infielders got hurt, and so that's where the replacement.
And that's why you have situations where at the end of the year, when these guys finish in the top 10 MVP, and you look back and be like, what? He wasn't an all-star? It's like, this stuff's kind of weird.
Kyle Stowers has to be here.
Hey, Kyle Stowers, wrong time to be dunking on Kyle Stowers right now, folks, after his three-homer game against his former club.
We got starters.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Skeens, Tarek Skubal. Friggin' duh. Same thing as last year. Run it back. These are the two best pitchers in the world.
But let's not underappreciated because when we spoke a week ago, we were like, oh, no, they're pitching this weekend. Neither of them are going
to
start.
They both got moved up to Friday.
Right. And neither pitched well. I know Scooble didn't. I'm not sure what happened with Skeens on Friday.
I'm pretty sure Skeens did well. So they're both going to be starting the All-Star game. That's great. I think that Zach Wheeler just, hey, like, I'm here too. Like, I'm just as good. But Skeens and Scooble are the two biggest dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And them going to toe-to-toe it, for one inning. It will be cool. We had a little storyline of Max Fried calling Tarek Skubal. So it seems like Aaron Boone asked Max Fried if he wanted to start. Remember, Boone, Yankees manager, is the manager for the AL team because they were in the World Series last year. Boone was like, hey, Fried, you want to start? Fried was like, it should be Tarek Skubal. Fried called Tarek Skubal and was like, you want to start? You should start.
Right. Which, like, I'm, again, the timing of that is a little strange. But yeah, I mean, I love because Fried was starting on Saturday. But either way, very cool. And yes, Fried understanding ball. Like, yeah, of course, Tarek Skubal should be starting. So anyway, though, that'll be very exciting. We obviously do not have lineups yet, but I guess we will get those today, right?
Yep.
We will get those today. So
they have them on that big board at the press conference.
Yes. So that will be fun. And then finally, before we take a break, no Ronald Acuna in the Derby. This is a bit of a bummer.
I was wrong.
Indisputably, after he had that, you know, got scratched for a game in Sacramento, came back, hit two homers, and it was like, he's fine. What's the big deal? He will be stepping aside, I guess, in favor of self-preservation amidst this Braves season that does not appear to be going anywhere.
Hilariously, he will be starting the All-Star game, presumably batting first and in right field.
Yep.
And will not be in the Derby. Matt Olson, fellow Brave, takes his place. Olson did the Derby once while he was a member of the A's, I believe, in Denver in 2021.
Yeah. I know circumstances change, and so I'm not going to get too mad at Ronald, but, like, I don't know.
You can't get mad at Ronald. This feels like the Braves being like, don't get hurt.
Yeah, but then why did we let him do it to begin with? Like, I don't know. Like, to me, that's the part that I'm not loving. Like, I would have understood if the Braves told him before that, like, no, dude. We need you coming back. We need you. That I would have been disappointed, but it would have made more sense than him having this brief injury scare, coming back, playing great, and then opting out again. And either way, it's fine.
It's a big deal, though.
We're still excited for the Derby, and I'm not mad at Ronald, and the Braves fans will be excited to cheer for Matt Olson, but as much as we're excited for Caminero and O'Neill Cruz and all these guys, Ronald was so far and away the biggest name in this Derby. And if we are broadening it to the casual fan and it's like, hey, the Home Run Derby's tonight, who's in it? In terms of name value, he was, like I just said, so far ahead of everybody else that him not being in it, I think will unfortunately probably make it a little bit. Now, again, it gives an opportunity for these other guys to step up and kind of take that space, but that's a little disappointing.
If you could buy stock in, like, Instagram followers.
Okay. Yeah.
O'Neill Cruz, buy the dip right now.
Yeah. So that's the thing at this point now, right? I mean, Olson's still just, of course, in Atlanta, but nationally, of the guys now in it, like, who has the highest profile?
Jazz.
I think it's Jazz. Yeah, it has to be Jazz. He's been on a video game cover. He's a Yankee. Maybe Cal Raleigh is second just because of how historic his first half has been. But
he's got the big dumper.
And he's got the nickname and the
caboose.
And the caboose. But these other guys, it's not.
No.
Again, you heard us talk on Friday. We are overjoyed, like, so excited for tonight. So it's not about us. But if we broaden it out, I do think that this is a disappointing outcome. But big news for folks sitting in right field, because we got another left-handed hitter in it in this event in Matt Olson. And we'll see what he can do.
Let's take a break. And when we get back, we will recap day one of the MLB draft. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. When we see something with our eyes, I think it means we know it better. Let's do a field report.
Sunday evening at the Coca-Cola Roxy Theater right across from Truist Park, we had the first three rounds of the 2025 MLB Draft.
Also known as Schusterman Christmas.
That's correct. And I had a good time. Before we get to the picks, let's tell people what this looked like. We kind of previewed it a little bit on Friday about how the draft has become an interesting event for better or for worse since it has been moved to the All-Star weekend, become an event that fans can attend. But player attendance has been up and down in recent years. And most notably this year, there were zero draftees in attendance. Now, you wrote about this, and I encourage people to go check that out to get some perspective around the league. I want to talk about, again, the vibe in the theater in general, but you know, once we kind of realized that there weren't going to be any draftees there, how did that manifest and how did that impact your experience being at the draft?
Yeah.
And what you think? Again, we can't speak to what it felt like at home watching on TV.
Let me start with this.
Yeah.
So the way that the draft feels for us in person is very different than how it presents on TV. In person, like Robert Flores is on stage with Xavier Scruggs trying to keep all the people in the building entertained.
Yeah.
That does not really get shown on TV.
No.
Right? So the TV is just the desk being like, well, I think that Dax Kilby is going to be a third baseman, yeah, blah, 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 right?
Yep. That's what Greg Amsinger sounds like.
Just nailed like it. That.
Yeah. But that's, you know, now I will say we can, because of how it's set up, like we can sort of hear they have the ESPN sure, and the MLB sure, Network sure. broadcast going on. But to your point, you know, if you're watching on TV, you are going to see the reactions of the players on their couch at home anyway, and way more easily than we're going to see it in the theater where they might show it on the screen, yeah, but it's a little bit more fragmented.
So no players in the building is interesting. Since 2007, this event has been televised, right? Kind of a step behind the MLB, or excuse me, a step behind the NBA and NFL drafts in terms of when it started going to TV. Since 2007, a total of 75 players have attended the draft in person. This was the first time since 2010 that nobody showed up. All right? Nobody showed up. Why? Let's talk about why, and then we'll talk about if it matters. Right? Now, the why is really that agents are concerned about their players showing up to the draft because it may promote or indicate a willingness to sign a professional contract, thus, in some way, hurting their leverage in bonus negotiations. How real is this? Impossible to say.
Yeah, I would also say it is also, and I still believe, I think even more so, the very basic, you don't want to send your kid out there when he doesn't know when he's going to get picked.
Yep.
And it's just, is it going to be a positive experience? Is that how they want to have that moment received? Even if they know 100%, hey, you are going to be picked between picks 10 and 25. That will happen. There's a big difference between getting picked 10th and 25th in terms of the experience. And maybe you all are only going to be there with your family and a couple of your friends instead of your entire high school or your entire high school baseball team or all of your college teammates. Like, it's not that, I mean, yes, there is an agent, there's a business side of this that is relevant.
But there's
and agents are always going to mention that, but the experience is relevant. And sure, it's cool to be on TV and shake the commissioner's hand, but this is not an event where that is the norm and the standard. And so it is a lot harder to convince people, especially when it's moving around to all these different cities,
right,
that it is worth going.
Why do the football and basketball dudes go? Because the football and basketball dudes go.
That's what you do.
That's what you do. You show up, you go. Every year in those drafts, the biggest story usually is, can you believe this guy fell? Here he is sweating it out on TV while his girlfriend, you know, starts to question her decision making and like the family is freaking out. And like Shedeur Sanders, right? He did not go. Imagine if he had gone.
Yeah. Well, right? Like, still, no, again, but no matter what, it's not that it's going to be the biggest story because we know people aren't watching the baseball draft as much as they are watching the other two. At the same time, again, it's still about that experience. It's about thinking what the kids are going to want to do. And when you consider that this is not an event that is established as something that you're supposed to go to, it is not surprising that we ended up with a year where it's like, actually, nobody wants to go.
But the thing that's weird about it is, in order to grow the draft, having the players there feels important. That emotion, the tangibleness of them in the place kind of gives the event the verve it needs to matter. And if you don't have that, then why are we in this theater watching Rob Manfred walk up to the stage to say people's names? Like, we could do that from home. You know what I mean? That.
Well, I agree. But once you put it at All-Star, I mean.
And this is the last point. So this is the last
yeah,
point.
Yeah, I mean, they might as well make it an event some of some form.
Putting it at All-Star makes sense if you want it to be an event. But if you're not going to get players there, it's a really doofy event. And then every front office person in baseball is like, why did we move this thing? Teams hate the new date. It was pushed back by a month in 2021. They hate the new date because the deadline is 2 weeks away and they really don't focus on the deadline until the draft's over, which is why there are so few trades made nowadays before the All-Star break, right? So it's, I think, frustrating for people to have things go both ways there. Other things from the draft, the mascots.
Right. So again, you kind of, they have to, as we said, they still want to make it a lively event for the people who are in the building. And this has been true since 2021 when they did this for the first time, because it's All-Star and you have all these people there and you have fans. Like, there are fans in there. I love having all of the mascots there. It is so great because, to me, it's like mascots are essentially, and this is not meant to be disrespectful or anything.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
It is the lowest common denominator of like sports fandom experience, which is just like the mascots doing goofy stuff, which is great. I love it. I was chopping it up with Wally. He came over. Right? Red Sox picks coming up.
What did he have to say?
Wally come over and I said, hey, man, who are you guys picking?
Wally said,
he whispered, I can't reveal what Wally told me, but. I think was also surprised that Kyson Witherspoon was on the board at 15. But the point is that you have that happening. The mascots running around dancing, getting these fans hype combined with the draft, which is just an inherently deeper cut niche experience. And it's one thing, you know, for the first few picks when, you know, maybe some of these players are higher profile. Oh, we got a Holiday and we'll talk about that. But once we get to the towards the middle and later part of the first round and you got mascots just going wild for these high school shortstops, that fans are just like, yeah, sure, man.
Braves are taking Tate Southacin out of a Nevada high school.
Do. And of course,
Blooper's like,
yeah, we got like, and also especially for the Braves pick, because you got a lot of Braves fans in there.
There's a drum line.
And there's all kinds of hype stuff. And then they have a couple younger kids come announce the pick. And Tate Southacin's like, yeah, whatever. So
it's like, he's not going to be a true spark for 6 years.
It's just great because like all the different complicated layers of this draft, while just throwing in the mascots on top, it's perfect. It's very chaotic and strange, but I adored it. And by the way, we have to mention Mr. Met.
Great job last night, Mr. Met.
I actually don't know if this was tweeted about or if anyone put this on the broadcast or anything. So I still don't understand the context of this.
There was a Lumineers concert.
Okay.
I believe at Citi Field.
Oh, okay, okay.
Mr. Met shows up in like a hipster / Amish overall get up.
Yeah.
Walks on stage, is tossed a tambourine by King Lumineer, I guess.
Yep. This was over the weekend. This was just a few days ago.
He fumbles the tambourine.
Yep.
Bad defense.
Yep.
Been an issue for this Mets season, maybe. Fumbles the tambourine, picks it up, everything's fine. Oh, Ophelia. Okay, starts strolling down the stage, but it's like one of those stages where there's potholes all about.
It's a stage at a concert, and Mr. Met's not used to traversing such a stage. And dropping the tambourine was merely the appetizer for Mr. Met stumbling off the stage. Now, why do I bring all this up? Now, this is already hilarious. But because mascots are constantly, you know, their story is constantly being told. It is all connected. Mr. Met, when he showed up to the draft, which, by the way, Mets weren't picking till pick 38.
And by the way, I am skeptical it's the same person.
I had that thought too. I think about this with mascots all the time when they're making all these different appearances. It is a full-time job for the person who is the mascot, but when they are showing up in different places, there have certainly circumstances where it's not the same person. But maybe this was the same person. Either way, the continuity was on point, because what does Mr. Met do when he walks into the draft? He is limping. He knows that when everyone sees Mr. Met, like, ooh, you doing all right there? And he just like,
great.
And I hope he was excited about Mitch Voit. I don't know if he was still there by the time the Mets were picking. I don't think he was. But either way, Mrs. Met was also there, which I don't know if she was at the concert.
That was probably the biggest injury at a Lumineers concert ever.
Not a lot of like mosh pit energy. Okay, anyway, let's get to the actual picks. I just wanted to talk about mascots of the draft because it's been funny since they started it. Where do you... Let's go begin at the top.
Okay.
Eli Willits, first overall.
The Nationals, there was a lot of buzz about this pick heading into draft night because they canned their whole thing. They fired Davey Martinez. They fired Mike Rizzo, who'd been there since the Protozoic era. And that meant, like, who's going to get taken first overall? Is this going to be a new ideology? The two big names heading into the night were Ethan Holliday, a shortstop, kind of, from Oklahoma, son of Matt Holliday, brother of Jackson Holliday, and Reed Holliday. That's the younger one. And Kate Anderson, a left-handed pitcher from LSU. But the Nats said, and they took Eli Willits. What kind of player is Eli Willits?
Yeah, so I had Eli Willits number one on my board. Just talking to enough teams about him. Also the son of a major leaguer, Reggie Willits, also from Oklahoma. Also has a brother named Jackson.
J-A-X-O-N.
Yeah, spelled with an X. But Eli Willits is the youngest player, or one of the few youngest players in this class. Does not turn 18 until December. And he has just stood out in a big way since he was showing up to the University of Oklahoma scrimmages when he was like 14. His dad, Reggie is the associate head coach for the Sooners. And this is just an extremely advanced player who is this young and has gotten even so much better over the last year and has kind of grown into enough physicality to where the Nationals already believed he was one of, if not the best hitter in the draft, believes he gets sick of shortstop, believes he's going to grow into more power, and just has basically everything. He is giving you a floor and ceiling that you could basically argue there's nobody else in this draft that can give you. And he is going to cost a lot less than Ethan Holliday and Kate Anderson, who are Scott Boras clients.
However, I believe the GOAT, Mike DeBartolo.
Already the GOAT.
Mike DeBartolo.
Man, we're just...
The greatest DeBartolo of all time.
Okay, Jake's favorite interim GM. He said, yeah.
He said, we thought Eli Willits was the best player in the draft.
Yeah, same. He just like me for real. Anyway, so that was like, okay, wow. But we were like, okay, this is a possibility. We are not expecting it. We knew they worked him out. He had a private workout. We knew it's like, okay, if they do really swerve from Rizzo, this is like an Orioles style. A lot of their new front office, they've got their scouting director, Brad Selick. Like, he came from the Orioles.
He was like the third most likely selection.
I think that's fair to say. Yes. However, at number two,
the Angels.
So good job, Nats. I love the rest of their draft. Ethan Petrie, Landon Harmon, love it. Go Nats, go. But the Angels, you can always count on them to keep things spicy. Because we would assume, well, you got these three awesome left-handed pitchers at the top of the draft.
College.
Liam Doyle, college pitchers. Kate Anderson, who's available, right? After he doesn't go one. Kate Anderson, Liam Doyle, Tennessee. Jamie Arnold, Florida State. And we know, well, what do the Angels do? They want someone who's going to go straight... practically straight to the big leagues. Sometimes in Ryan Johnson's case, literally straight to the big leagues. And you can make an argument that all three of those left-handed pitchers could pitch in the big leagues pretty quickly. And instead, they're like, no, Tyler Bremner. Now, Tyler Bremner, I like Tyler Bremner a lot. And I actually think Tyler Bremner ended up being fairly underrated by the end of this process. This is a right-handed pitcher from UC Santa Barbara. Came into the season as a possible top five pick. He struggled early on in the season. This is someone who was dealing with a lot. Off the field as his mother was battling cancer. She passed away recently. So that is, of course, a very tragic personal story that Tyler Bremner was dealing with throughout the season leading up to this massive time in his life. As the season goes on, Tyler Bremner really starts picking it up. And he, I believe, struck out 10 in six of his last seven starts. And he started to see the pitcher that coming into the year was like, no, he like, really, if we had talked in December, we said, yeah, Tyler Brenner's going to go too. Like, okay, yeah, sure. But his stock had dropped enough, and more importantly, the lefties had gotten so much better that very few people were like, okay, even if you were going to go under and the Angels were going to pick, they're going to take one of these left-handed pitchers, right? And instead, they go with Bremner, and that is quite the decision.
And the Angels love taking fast-moving players, but not according to them. Sam Blum, friend of the program, Angels writer for The Athletic, tweeted, I asked Angels scouting director Tim McElvin why the Angels prioritize fast-moving pitchers year after year. Here's what he said. Quote, I wouldn't look at it as a priority for us to get guys that can move like that. I would say history says otherwise, Mr. McElvin. We do a lot of work trying to find guys that are wired right. When you get guys that want to win, that want to compete, that are able to do that, that are ready to do that, and are ready physically to do that as well, then that's where guys can take off. So you're looking for guys that are ready to compete physically. That sounds like college fast-moving players. I continue. For us, when we're looking out for guys and it's easy for us to go to the field and watch guys throw, watch guys run, that part of it is easy. Disagree. That part of it is actually kind of hard to figure out who's going to be good. But when you're trying to figure out what's inside of these guys, what's upstairs, what's in here.
That seems hard.
Points towards heart. That's the part we spend a ton of time trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Well, here's the biggest thing about the Angels talking like they've got it all figured out. They don't.
I struggle with this because on one hand, I am weirdly impressed that they have zoomed to the big leagues have mostly turned out to be pretty good, but the team is not. And when you have been bad for this long, regardless of how many guys you rush to the big leagues that end up being okay, why am I supposed to take your perspective seriously, especially when your next few picks are relievers from college throwing 100 who you're going to put in the big leagues right away? It's not an accident. Like, we understand. Don't
we see
by the way, why even pretend like you're not doing that? Like, own it. Because honestly, sometimes it's been working. Now, on an individual level, because the team's not very good. They're still sort of in it this year, right?
Yeah,
they're not heading for 100 losses. But it's just, it's hard to, when you have teams like this and the Rockies and the team at Pirates, you have to earn the respect and for us to take you seriously. Because there's other teams that are smart. Like, okay, let's say the Mariners had taken Tyler Bremner. Let's say the Angels had taken, right? I think there would be Mariners fans that would have been like a little like, oh, yikes. But you'd be like, well, Tyler Bremner's probably going to be pretty awesome.
They develop college pitching.
Right. And so you have to earn that benefit of the doubt that your strategy is something that is going to lead to success or is going to be the best for the players. And the Angels just don't have that.
It is the flip side of maybe my favorite baseball tweet of all time from Sam Miller. Love this trade for the Rays. Who'd they get? Who'd they give up?
Love this draft for the Angels.
Hate this draft for the Angels. Who'd they take?
Who will be in the big leagues in 25 minutes? Anyway, Angels. Okay, whatever, sure. Then, boom, Cade Anderson falls to the Mariners at 3. They're overjoyed. Ethan Holliday of the Rockies, as we expect.
Two teams who had, they had these players number one on their board, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Right?
So they are overjoyed. there's a video of the Mariners turning the pick in. And, you know, Scott Hunter gives the draft ID and they send the pick in and they hang up the phone and Jerry turns around and he just goes like, that was awesome. And you hear someone in the back, like, I think someone in the back's like number one player on the board, which again, remember the Mariners were not supposed to be picking third. They get unbelievable draft lottery luck. And then that's just a wild, you know, sequence of events. So, good for them.
You're so right, dude. Like the 2024 Mariners.
Like, they won 86 games?
Going 85 and 75?
77. Yeah.
And then getting ending up with the best player on their board the following year.
Is outrageous.
Outrageous.
So anyway, so good stuff for Seattle there. Let's just broaden it up, open it up, just bop around a little bit. Who are some other drafts that caught your attention?
Dude, Miami.
Miami. This was a fun one. If you've been watching college baseball recently, you are going to enjoy the Miami Marlins draft. And by the way,
and it's clear that the Miami Marlins were watching
college
baseball. They've
watched
college
baseball, and this is a team, a franchise, especially at this point in this rebuild, that they've been taking some swings on some high schoolers recently, some of which have not been going super awesome. And I believe they had four picks on day one, and they used them all on college players. Iva Arquette, the Oregon State shortstop, who again, I think a lot of people consider to be a top five talent.
Let me just hop in here. They took four college bats, three of whom are unique in that they are high ceiling, high risk type college players.
Yes.
Usually college hitters are the safest demographic, not the injury risk that pitchers have. They're closer to the big leagues. And so you can, the ceiling is lower, but the floor is higher. They kind of zagged within that demographic. Iva Arquette is a 6'5 shortstop with a bunch of chase and swing and miss issues, but real juice and freaky athleticism that we think is going to allow him to stay at shortstop. Cam Cannarella, their second pick, is more of like a skills over tools type. But Brandon Compton in the second and Max Williams in the third, tool sheds, right?
Yeah, I mean, Max Williams playing center field every day for Florida State and has... I mean, normally he would have the most raw power. Normally, Iva Arquette would have the most raw power in this class so far. But Brandon Compton at the MLB Draft Combine, I mean, listen, I understand it's batting practice, but his like average exit velocity in his BP rounds at the Combine was like 110. He maxed at 116 multiple times. He's always hit with wood. He's been good in the summer. I love that pick. Cannarella is one that, like, in another class where he was maybe the highest upside player that you took, I wouldn't like it as much. But I love this crop if you like college baseball. Yeah. And by the way, it's cool because for the Marlins, normally if you're going to take the high schoolers, you're looking for that more upside, for them to be able to get that upside with college players who are closer to helping them in the big leagues in a farm system that still desperately needs hitters. Yeah. This is big time because the Marlins have been horrific at developing hitters. Now we know they've had some success in the big leagues with some of the guys they've traded for, but these four guys are going to be really interesting to watch in the next few years and see how they develop in a farm system who, like I said, they have not produced hitters whatsoever.
Dodgers draft.
Oh, okay.
Super fun.
Sure. Yeah.
So they don't pick until 40 and 41.
Yep.
And they take two teammates from the University of Arkansas, Zachary Root and Charles Davalon. You're low on Root.
Lowish, yeah. But this is about where I expected him to go. So,
Davalon, I'm all in on. You know him because he's the guy who dropped the ball in the College World Series. Compact.
You don't have to keep reminding people.
It's just what people know.
I don't. I mean, maybe fewer people were watching, hopefully. No, he's awesome. He's from Quebec, one of the best hit tools in the class. And
little baby Jeremy.
And also cool because the Dodgers normally tied to high school players. They go with four college guys.
Tell me about their third round pick.
Yeah, so Cam Leiter, or I guess second round, they could take Cam Leiter, another Leiter cousin who, sure enough, injured all season. So Dodgers are like, hey, he was already hurt. We didn't break this kid.
Pre-injured.
He was already injured. But he showed really big stuff as a sophomore. So if they can get him right, he could be good. But yeah, Landon Vidurick, the outfielder from Cincinnati, one of the most athletic players in the class, kind of a late riser in the process. That's someone you can imagine the Dodgers kind of teaching how to hit a little bit more, and that he could really take off in a hurry.
Two other drafts I like. A's.
Yep.
The Yolo County babies.
Yep.
Taking Jamie Arnold and Devin Taylor, two college players. Just good value for where they fell. Arnold, like a top five player. You had him ranked fifth, I think.
Yeah.
They get him at 11. Devin Taylor, one of the most advanced college bats in the draft, ranked definitely in like the top 30.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he had about as good of a statistical resume as any college player in the class.
And he falls to 48. Two great picks for the A's. And then I really like what the Phillies did.
Okay.
Gage Wood is the dude who threw the no-hitter in the College World Series for Arkansas. He falls to 26. There was some buzz for him as high as like 12, 13. Now, is he a reliever? Maybe. It's an elite fastball, like low release point, tons of ride, sick breaking ball. Is there a third pitch? TBD. Are there injury concerns with his shoulder? 100,000%. Is the command there? Who knows? Maybe a reliever. Guess what? Phillies could use a reliever.
Right.
I think there's a chance that he throws in the big leagues this season in the pen, and then they develop him as a starter for next year.
It is amazing to think about like his last college outing being that 19 strikeout no-hitter in Omaha, and if he does become a reliever and like never starts again, which is like on the table.
His
like what
last start.
Yeah, like if that was just his last start
of his life.
Hell of a way to go out. Or like when he would next throw a complete game, say he does become a starter, is just like very hard to imagine. But anyway, that was a fun one.
I believe, really liked. I'll just bring up two other drafts that I think you liked.
Yeah.
Orioles, Brewers, and then the Rays you also liked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's easy to pick the teams that had a bunch of picks. Brewers having five picks, Rays having five picks. I really like the Brewers, Andrew Fisher. from Tennessee, one of my favorite hitters in the draft. I had him ranked 20, which felt aggressive. He goes 20. That's super validating. Love J.D. Thompson, the lefty from Vanderbilt. Rays, love their five picks. Good diversity of high school and college. And then with the Orioles, I mean, you have seven picks on day one. It's going to be hard to screw it up. They have a lot of this is an interesting group. I mean, we were like, okay, are they going to take any pitchers?
Yes, but not
until the fifth pick. But I love Joseph Jirwa, the big lefty from Michigan State, one of my favorite pitchers in this draft. So I love that one. And then they ended up, because they have the biggest pool, I mean, unbelievable that they had this much, that they were able to get this many guys who were like ranked in the top 40 even.
I believe it is the highest Michael Elias has ever taken a pitcher.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, 58th overall. That is quite possible, but still felt like we were waiting. But yeah, Loy and Bodine and DeBrun and Irish. I mean, that's amazing.
We have so many other draft thoughts.
Oh, we'll save them.
If you want them, find us in Atlanta, buy us a six pack.
Yeah, and you can go read, you know, the live blog. We wrote up, I wrote up some takeaways from the night. So we will keep those draft thoughts coming. We're going to take a break now.
Before we take a break, I just want to give you some credit and some love because draft is your baby. You pour so much energy and effort into understanding it and what I appreciate the most about it is that you do it for yourself. You do it for yourself because it makes you happy and it gives you, you know, purpose and direction, and it's fun as hell for you. And the payoff on the public side is relatively minimal. Relatively minimal. And I just find it to be very impressive how much you know about this and how much you care about it. So good job, George.
Thank you. No, I was happy. I was happy with the coverage and the work that led up to it. We had, you know, 43 of the top 50 picks did go in the top 50. In my top 50 rankings, went in the top 50. Was very happy with that. So hopefully, if you followed my draft coverage, you learned something and were prepared.
Who goes number one next year?
2026? Rock Chalowski. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about
baseball
not
games.
All-star stuff. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Jake Mintz. That's me. Jordan Schuster. That's you.
What's up? I'm still here.
There was baseball over the weekend. We are not going to talk about every series because ain't nobody got time for that. Let's go around the league. Mop.
We had a mop. Four-game sweep. Haven't had a mop in a little bit. No, the Blue Jays
looking dirty.
Yeah. No, Blue Jays had a couple mops, were the two most recent ones. But the Boston Red Sox welcoming the Rays to town for four over the weekend, and they won all four. They have now won 10 in a row for the first time since 2018. Did anything happen that season?
They won the World Series.
Whoa, spoilers.
I haven't seen the season yet.
What happened this weekend, Jake? For these Boston Red Sox, other than winning all four games. How did they do it?
On Friday night, Seydon Rafaela, a player who I am ready to admit.
What happened on Thursday?
I was wrong about. Well, that wasn't the weekend. They won on Thursday.
Well, that's important. That's how you get a mop. They win on Thursday. Yeah, that's important.
Win on Thursday, Friday.
That was, oh, right. Thursday was them scoring three runs against Brian Baker, who showed up, you know, 10 minutes before the game for the Rays.
Yes.
Okay, yes. So they win on Thursday, yes.
A player I was very wrong about. Ready to admit.
Time to own
he's
that
been
one.
Been on fuego. Two-run walk-off bomb with the Sox down one in the ninth.
Man.
Two out. I mean, this was like...
Sexy swing.
He's
pulling the ball in the air suddenly. They like told him to, and he's like, oh, why didn't you mention that?
Oh, it's like the meme of... it's Future and Drake, right? Oh,
just pulling the air.
No, Lil Yachty and Drake.
Okay. There you go. I don't know.
The computer.
Jake, hashtag doesn't know your meme, I think is what I'm hearing.
What's up, dude? Saturday, Garrett Crochet, complete game shutout, 9 punchouts, 1-0 win.
Good pitcher.
The best? No. Good? Yes.
Jeff Passan had a tweet that...
He did?
Yeah, believe it or not. Low light of the draft night was Jeff walking up to me, drive-by spoiling a pick. Like, he...
I told him not to do that in advance.
No, but it was later on. It was funny. Jeff was just, like, walking behind me, and he just goes, Cam Cannarella.
43rd overall to the Marlins. Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate you.
Did that fill you up with joy, Jeff? You got to spoil a 43rd pick.
I'm glad he waited till 43 because I don't like spoilers. Anyway,
it's funny that he just has that itch. Like, he just needs to do it.
It was great. I love Jeff. He had a tweet that said, pitching Mount Rushmore right now is skiing, scuba, wheeler, crochet. How do you feel about that?
I think you got to put Mizorowski on there.
That's true. Mizorowski snubbed.
Chris Sanchez snubbed from...
Yeah, what? The chances got to be on the Mount Rushmore. Anyway.
Sunday, Brian Bello.
Yes.
Really good. Rafael Homers again. Red Sox are now in the second wild card spot in the American League. 10 wins in a row, just 3 back of the Jays in the division, 1 back of the Yankees for that top wild card spot. Since they traded Devers, things have been going pretty good. Devers has been terrible in San Francisco. The Red Sox can't lose. The Red Sox have not lost a game since Garrett Crochet went to the zoo to see the pandas in D.C.
Which, honestly, dude, like... I haven't been to the D.C. Zoo in a while. This alone is making me consider a return trip.
Next time I'm moving to D.C. Home.
Yeah, it's true. We should go to the zoo with Garrett Crochet.
The panda is very important to me. You know, my elementary school was a relatively young thing when I went. It was a new Jewish school.
Yeah.
And we voted on the mascot as a school.
Oh, yes.
And it was right when D.C. got the pandas from China.
It's big time.
And we voted on the pandas, and my school was the pandas. So the pandas have always had a big place in my heart, and I guess in Garrett Crochet's heart as well. Two other sweeps this past weekend, Mariners over the Tigers.
Oh, my gosh.
Best record in baseball for Detroit. Mariners say ID care.
Yeah, man. I mean, Mariners are kind of bouncing back and forth between extremely impressive and extremely depressing series. The Mariners offense just went absolutely ham this weekend.
Julio was like, I'm not going to the All-Star game, but...
Julio was like, I got to rest up for a better second half. And he's like, why wait for the second half when I can just dominate the Tigers? Mariners scored 12 on Friday, 15 on Saturday, 8 more on Sunday. And they beat Skubal on Friday. Castillo was good. Kirby was pretty good. They beat Mize, and I mean, the offense was explosive. We got Cole Young is now starting to really, really kind of settle into that starting second base job, which is a pretty big deal. Luke Raley being back in the lineup is a huge deal for them. Randy continues to rake, and listen, this is usually the time of year when Julio starts to heat up, and that talent is still in there. So if he gets going, the complexion of this lineup really starts to change. So very encouraging showing for the Mariners. Obviously their biggest. Also, like, winning going into the break, what a feeling, right? I mean, that's not just, I mean, even just winning on Sunday going into the break is good. Sweeping the Tigers on the road going into the break to send your All-Stars, you know, here to Atlanta. We'll see Cal Raleigh in the Derby. We'll see Munoz and Wu and those guys. So Randy will be here. So, big for Seattle.
Brewers taking all 3 games from the Nats. That's the other sweep. The Nats still stink. Yeah. Getting rid of your GM.
Good draft, bad baseball team.
Good draft, bad baseball team. The Milwaukee Brewers have won 7 in a row leading into the break. Yep. They are in the top spot in the NL wild card, 1.5 games up on the Mets, which
Wow. They passed the Mets. Oh, I didn't realize that. I was going to say, yeah, if there's any other, I was going to ask you what any some other just like
so
just all-star Brewers. Break standings takeaways.
I want to just do a quick Brewers thing. I know I'm biased. Caleb Durbin.
Dude, what bias? You don't need bias. He dude's been great.
Brewers third baseman Caleb Durbin, who went to the same school as me. Let's actually rephrase that. I went to the same school as him, but I was there first. Products of the same baseball program. You know, what built that as well, kind of. Caleb Durbin, D3 icon, traded for Devin Williams in the offseason, is a 2-win player at the All-Star break for the Milwaukee Brewers. He has 3 walk-offs already this season in 74 games.
Tied with Francisco Lindor for the most walk-offs in baseball. Last 37 games, Caleb Durbin hitting .319, .403, .445.
If you go by BREF WAR, he would be the 5th most valuable position player on the New York Yankees right now.
Yikes.
Behind Trent Grisham, Jazz, Cody Bellinger, and Aaron Judge. Do the Yankees need a third baseman?
Nah.
Yankees fans, let us know. Would you trade Devin Williams straight up for Caleb Durbin right now?
I know the Brewers wouldn't.
That's for sure.
Anyway, that's very cool.
Nestor Cortes is just sitting somewhere in the minor leagues getting his arm back.
Truly have not even thought about
him. So I'm just so amped for Derby.
Yeah, Brew Crew, really impressive. What, 1 back of the Cubbies?
Should Durbin have been an All-Star?
Yeah, duh.
With Miz? Durbin and Mizorowski being on the same team is incredible. I know we're really in the weeds here. Durbin is built like a like a, he's just
he's
looks
a
like
fire
a
hydrant. I
bicep.
Mean,
he's built like a bicep. Mizorowski is built like Jordan Schusterman got pulled in the Mike TV Willy Wonka machine.
A wacky waving inflatable arm guy, you know, like outside the car dealership. Anyway, Brewers are good. Brewers are, past the Mets. How about that? And I just, you know, this is because we're going to be right into deadline mode. Once we get to Friday, it's like second half time. Okay, which now in or out, guys? Like, are you selling or not? Diamondbacks we're watching closely. Orioles we're watching closely. These painfully mid teams in the American League, Rangers, Angels, Twins, Royals, Guardians. Like, what do we got? What do we got coming out of the break? That will certainly be top of mind.
Three statistical things I just want to leave people with as we get out of here and we do all-star stuff. Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
7-win player at the all-star break. 7-win player.
Yeah.
At the All-Star break, Aaron Judge is slashing 355, 462, 733. That is a 1194 OPS, a 228 OPS plus. He is 128% better than league average. The most impressive thing is that I believe he leads the league in hits.
Sure does.
And intentional walks. He's up to 24, which is quite a number. That's the first thing. Second thing, Cal Raleigh, 38 home runs at the break.
I mean,
say it loud.
He's going to hit 38 more tonight, at least.
Does Cal Raleigh hit 38 home runs tonight?
I hadn't processed that Judge was up to 24 intentional walks.
Yep.
That is something I will be monitoring very closely in the second half. He only had 20 all of last year, which was a career high.
Last first half statistical takeaway, the Colorado Rockies have a negative 253 run differential. Negative 253.
Oh, my God.
Maybe Ethan Holliday is worth 253 runs. Two other nuggets. One, futures game. We didn't really talk about it. Kind of another weird, lackluster 7-inning affair. We enjoy it. We know it's not a big deal. Biggest moment from this was Josue DePaula, Dodgers prospect, homering and then cussing up a storm in two separate languages while he was rounding the bases. Perfect encapsulation of who this guy is as a prospect. Born in Brooklyn to Dominican parents, spent time in both places, has a very thick Brooklyn accent. Like when he says, let's get it, as he's rounding the bases, it sounds like freaking Pop Smoke. You know what I mean? Like it's like the same vocal tone. He's an unbelievable player.
He's great. Dodgers, so glad they have some more
hitters
coming.
Finally, some talent. And then Paul Konerko.
Oh, yeah.
Let's end with this.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, so what was the exact context here?
I already closed my laptop.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate that. What a teammate. Jake's like, Paul Konerko, take it away. I only vaguely know what is going on here other than that Paul Konerko got a jersey that was directly from the Pope.
Yeah, Pope signed jersey.
And the jersey says Konerko Pope Leo 14. But that makes sense because they're both 14. That's awesome.
Konerko wore 14.
But that is a lot. Two lines.
Can I see the pic?
On the jersey.
That's like, not how I would have done
it. It's not like, imagine if like Crow Armstrong was like Crow and then Armstrong was under it.
So I just want to say,
this was at the 2005 White Sox celebration, of course.
Great timing.
Yeah. Makes sense. But this is really, what a picture.
As a member of the Jewish community, I cannot speak to Pope Leo's first couple of months as Pope. But in regards to his White Sox fandom,
he's on fire.
He's nailed every beat.
You think he called in the Billy Carlson pick?
I don't. Oh my God. Can you imagine? Could you imagine we're at the draft? Rob Manfred's like, for this next pick, we have a special guest. Out walks the Pope in the hat. The 10th pick, the Chicago White Sox. So like Corona High School shortstop Billy Carlson, blessed be he. And walks
hey,
out.
It's like, yo, we can't get the players to come.
We got the Pope.
It's like let's take rather, all the budget that was set aside to get the players here and take care of them. That's going to Leo.
I'd rather have the Pope on site than
Billy
players.
Carlson. Yeah, I agree. But
I mean, is that
he wasn't there?
Or funnier idea: pretend like the Pope's one of the players. Here's Billy Carlson.
Whoa, that guy can play short.
He's old for the class.
Unbelievable. He is old for the class.
I know.
Not that old. All right, we're done. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to
the Pope.
The Pope. Thank you to Andrew Hartz. Thank you to Dan Harris. Thank you to Savannah here in the control room. here at these lovely studios here in Atlanta. We appreciate it.
Shouts out to Savannah.
You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Enjoy the Derby. Enjoy the All-Star Game. And we will be back after the All-Star Game on field at Truist Park. How much will we be sweating? Stay tuned, folks. But until then, thanks for listening.
Shane Smith, White Sox rep in the All-Star Game. Pope's watching.
Shane Smith will be asked questions about the Pope today at All-Star Media. That will happen. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.